listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Guys, we know the matchups game-wise in the NCAA tournament this upcoming weekend in the Final Four, but one of the other matchups that we can talk about and one of the factors heading into this tournament and this Final Four is experience versus youth. RJ, what do you guys in Vegas see coming up this weekend?
Listen, we gave Brad a lot of love yesterday, rightfully so.
Welcome to Mirage, Mr. Papa Giorgio.
When it came to him seeing first that Duke's three-pointers, or lack thereof, were a historic problem. Not a problem, but a problem that would have taken a historic event to overcome. And he was right, made a lot of money for it. Well, he's seeing something when it comes to experience versus youth. Now, we've said this the whole tournament, and we've been saying it at pregame.com for years, which is this is unlike anything else, the NCAA tournament. And the Final Four is unlike any part of the tournament other than the Final Four. You can't understand it till you live it, might be the way to say it. And history tells us now that that experience is very valuable. Brad Powers.
Yeah, so since 1985, there's been 14 schools that have made their Final Four debut. So no other time prior in their school history they made the Final Four. This would be their first Final Four appearance. Of those 14 schools to make their debut, only 4 out of 14 have advanced to the championship game.
All right, so just that just requires winning the one game.
Yep.
So they were 4-10 straight up in that first game.
Yep. And then only one, Connecticut in 1999, was able to win the national championship in their first Final Four debut.
So 1-13, the Final Four virgins, we'll call it, 1-13 winning the title. And who's the Final Four?
We have two, actually, this year. It's actually Auburn and Texas Tech making the Final Four for the first time ever.
And oh, by the way, Auburn also gets winnowed out by one of our favorite trends, the number... or the champion has been a 4 seed or better 29 of the last 30 years. So, hey, listen, history gets bucked all the time. Doesn't mean it's impossible. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to play the percentages. And I'll tell you right now, the virgin teams. Now, you know, to me, I would make the case if a team made it in 1960 and then they make it this year, they wouldn't be a virgin team.
Yeah.
Obviously, any trend is going to be imperfect like that. Amongst the coaches, what's the Final Four appearance tally?
Eight total Final Fours combined.
How's eight that combined. Split up?
Tom Izzo, 8. Everyone else, 0.
Okay. So now, this is one you may not know off the top of your head. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas, talking about experience in the Final Four with Brad Powers. Has any of these head coaches been assistants on teams that went to the Final Four?
Yeah, Tony Bennett, he's the Virginia.
Well, first off, the fact Brad knows that right off the top.
I read 9 newspapers a day.
Yeah, Tony Bennett's the Virginia head coach. He was assistant coach when his dad, Dick Bennett, took Wisconsin to the Final Four.
Dickie Bennett.
Yeah, Dick Bennett in 2000.
And
from everyone else, I don't know.
But could be.
Yeah.
All right, so why don't we make this a little tease ahead till tomorrow? Let's take a gander at these coaches. Because even though you're not making every decision, when Belichick went to all those Super Bowls with Parcells, he learned a few things, right? So he wasn't as inexperienced entering that Rams game way back when with Brady in his second year as, let's say, a coach had never been to the Super Bowl. So let's take a gander and see the number of Final Four experiences that these head coaches have had, even as non-head coaches, because we know Izzo's the only one as a head coach.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I think this AAF story is bigger than almost anyone is getting. And I think we're going to be out ahead of it. And we've got the perfect guest for it. And like breaking news, and listen, that's what's great about live radio, is when something happens, it's not an emergency podcast and then editing and it's up 4 hours later. No, it is breaking news live. All right, so guys, this is, I tell you, when we go with guests, a lot of people like the big names. And when you have a national show, 200 stations nationwide, it's easy to get those big names. To me, I want a specialist. And we've got him, Ben Kercheval. And Ben, literally, all he's done pretty much, his specialization since the AAF started, was write about the AAF for CBS. And to me, I read through his Twitter today, and he's just totally on top of it. So let's start with Ben. Ben, first thing, what do you see as the top story today or the top element of this story? Obviously, the league potentially looks like very likely folding, feels like the big story. Is that what you see as the big story?
The one thing I can tell you, RJ, is that the fact that so many people in the AAF are in the dark about what Tom Dundon is going to do, to me, speaks total volumes about this situation. So Tom Dundon is the control owner of the AAF, and he got that title by, of course, he invested $250 million in the company in early February. He's the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, and at the time, it was sort of paraded as, okay, we're a startup company that needs capital investments. He's coming in and not really being maybe the savior that everyone was saying, but just that he's coming in injecting so much liquidity into this company that we can get another 3, 4, maybe even 5 years out of this until we have something later down the road, a better valuation, a partnership with the NFL. This gives us some breathing room. But basically ever since then, you know, Tom has control of the company and what it does. And I tell you, from talking to people around the Alliance, it was almost immediate remorse of having Tom on board. He has not consulted with anybody in terms of making these decisions, let alone speaking so publicly and candidly like he has. I've asked a number of people today, what is he, you know, what is he doing? What's his mindset? Why is he, you know, threatening to fold the league? Why is he now firing people, you know, in trying to get this whole thing shuttered? And every single response, literally every single one, has been, I don't know, I wish I could tell you. I mean, absolutely nobody is in Tom Dundon's head at this moment.
Okay, so part of the deal, and it was widely reported about that influx of money, is it your understanding, Ben, that part of that deal was to give Dundon complete control, meaning whatever decision he makes, is there any sense that there's any recourse? Is there any way for him to be outvoted? Or was part of the investment him having this type of fiat type control?
Yeah, it was sort of undersold to me at the time how much of an influence he would have. But obviously, when you invest that much money, and not only does he have the owner's title of it, he was named like chairman of the board. Well, RJ, he is the board. he is the voice in terms of whether this thing goes or not. And, you know, not even Charlie Ebersole, who's the CEO, Bill Polian, who's the head of football. I mean, if they could overrule what he's doing, they would do it in a heartbeat, and they simply can't just because of the way that this is structured. But like I said, everyone that I've spoken to in the AAF is like, Tom has years of NFL experience available to him. They are all working underneath him already. All he has to do is consult with them, and he's not trying to do it. And publicly, the way that it's all been playing out is Dundon is, you know, of course, trying to strong-arm the NFLPA into, you know, letting us have your practice squad players. Let's get this thing moving. But, you know, talks between the AAF and the NFLPA have been fine. I mean, Bill Polian and Dee Smith know each other. They go way back. And so I'm sitting there like, is this – I'm asking people, is this really the sticking point for him to try to make 3 years of work try to get accomplished in 3 weeks? And they're like, we don't think his actions match up to his words. There is a lot of distrust, obviously. But like I said, there are a lot of people, and high-ranking people no less, who are in the dark about this, and that is what is just so utterly stunning.
Wow.
I talked to a GM today, just real quick, talked to a GM today. There was supposed to be a statement at 5 o'clock Eastern. I asked the GM, I go, well, what's in the statement? He goes, I don't know. I mean, no, like, nobody knows.
We're talking with Ben Kercheval, who literally, if you would have asked him yesterday, I guess same answer today, what's your focus writing for CBS? The AAF. That's a specialization we like. Very articulate, Ben. So let's keep discussing this. This is the first time I've been on with Ben. If I would have asked you yesterday, what's the odds this season doesn't finish for the AAF? What would you have said?
I would have said they were pretty high. I thought they were going to finish. So that comes from the fact.
So that's the point. This is a surprise.
Yeah, this everyone that I've talked to has been blindsided. Literally everyone is blindsided. And this goes down the whole ladder. This isn't just high, you know, front office personnel. This is everyone. So
okay, so Ben, let me jump in. Let me ask you this question. Is other than the unknown, the Dundon, the influx money guy who's made this ultimate decision, other than the unknown of who knows what Dundon's going to do, what was the general optimism of how the AAF was going? Meaning, we're hearing this decision is contrary to Ebersol, contrary to this GM, that GM. Were they feeling like, man, we finally got this thing going, or boy, we feel optimistic? Or were they feeling like, yeah, it's not going as well as we'd hope, but there's still a chance to turn it around? What was the general optimism other than the Dundon X factor?
So they were optimistic because when Dundon came in, even though he injected a lot of money into the alliance, the materialism of the AAF had not changed, right? Like, they aimed to be a development league. They had a couple of offers lined up. They took Tom's. So they didn't feel like anything had, other than the influx of cash, of being liquid, they didn't feel like the vision had changed at all. The only thing that meant was they had a longer period of time to do what they wanted to do.
So if anything, more optimistic yesterday than they were at the start of the season.
I guess technically, yes, although if you recall, Tom Dundon started going on the record about this last week. So the last week has been what has been tumultuous. What I will say, though, is I spoke to some people on Sunday. I went down and covered one of the games in San Antonio, and the people that I talked to, I said, you know, hey, what's going on with Tom? Is he really going to do this? And they said, you know, teams have already booked hotels for practices for the next few weeks. So it seemed like business as usual, and I think that's the blindsiding part of it, was even though there was these public comments from Dundon a week ago, there was still this idea that, okay, no, we're going to keep going with this thing. We're still doing it. So that gives you an idea of how quickly this whole thing has turned on its head.
This is RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas, talking with the AAF specialist at CBS Sports, Ben Kercheval. Last minute or two with him, but like Paul Harvey used to say, he was pretty good at radio. There's the rest of the story here that I find the most fascinating. There's a thought that there's an app, yes, one of those things on your phone, that was at the heart of all this, and that potentially the influx of money in the league from Dundon had nothing to do with the league. That it was almost like, yeah, we'll buy your property, but we're going to tear down the diner because we got some condos going up. Ben, laid out for us, and I know you've been reporting on this. Tell us what we know for sure about this, I guess, rumor, and what is some of the speculation?
So that what you just said was the rumor. What I can tell you is that was not anyone's suspicion that I spoke with. And really, the bigger point is, because Tom, even if that
so
was...
So let's lay out angle, what the rumor was. Let's lay out the story about the app first.
Well, so that it was just what you said, which is that Tom Dundon invested a bunch of money to get to this technology that Charlie Ebersol had and was basically saying, okay, yeah, I might eat $70 million right away, but if I have access to this technology, then I can go make a Silicon Valley thing out of it and get, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars.
And this special technology was in-game prediction related. So the idea, so this is where the gambling angle comes all the way around, where the theory was there was some proprietary, truly differentiated technology that made the in-game betting experience. Will the next play be a run? Will it be a pass? Better than anyone else, and thus that technology was worth more than the league. That was what Monday Morning Quarterback put out, kind of a vague quote or a vague tweet about it. And so, so is that correct that it was in-game betting related?
Yeah, that's my understanding of it. But understand this: if Tom Dundon wants to try to take that, he's going to get sued massively. I mean, that it's not like you. And furthermore, just because he's the control owner, I mean, he's not the CEO, right? I mean, it's not like you can just up and leave when you're done. I mean, there's a lot of complications associated with that. So,
if this isn't the plan, then what's the plan? If you're telling me today things are no, imagine there's a dog, a lot of dog lovers out there. And imagine your dog's old and the doctor says, you know, if things go bad, you know, we might have to, you know, put the dog out of its misery. It's going to be like, oh, no, no. But then if you go back a couple months later and the dog's healthier than he was a couple months ago and you say, yep, got to put him out of his misery. It's like, wait a minute. The dog's better than he was. If this Dundon put money in, under the assumption of the way things were 8 weeks ago or 10 weeks ago, and things haven't gotten any worse, why would he want all his money to become worthless unless there's some plan here?
You're asking me a question that I don't know. I mean, I don't have an answer to that because Tom is not one of my direct sources. So that's
which makes me guess there's something more to this story. And I'm guessing that if you look at, and I'm just going to make a prediction here, just 200 stations, just nationwide. Sometimes I do have premonitions, as they say. I'm going to make a prediction that if you look at part of the deal that he signed to influx the money, that there's always senior, subordinated, junior debt, who gets paid first, how do things get distributed out if there is a liquidation. I bet we're going to find out the part of this deal was he's first up with the distribution and he gets his choice of assets. That is going to be my prediction. And there's going to be something related to him, Gordon Gekko style, coming in and from the center ripping out this company like Blue Star Airlines. That's my prediction. Ben, I'll let last word on this one. Do you think I'm going to be right or wrong?
I think you're going to be wrong.
All right. So you're saying that this billionaire made an investment and now is irrationally, for no reason, folding the investment when things have improved since he made the investment.
I'm saying that if he tried to do that, he would get sued.
Well, hey, listen, people get sued every day. The question is who's going to beat them in court. This will be fun. Ben, you were excellent. So once again, this is Ben Kercheval. On Twitter, it's Ben Kercheval, CBS Sports. Hopefully, we'll have him on again. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, RJ.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
There were a lot of rumblings that John Calipari may be on his way out of Kentucky. UCLA was one of the schools mentioned, but not so fast as Kentucky. Calipari has inked what is called a lifetime contract to stay the head coach at the University of Kentucky.
Now, is that the major announcement, or is there another one coming?
No, this is the major announcement, John Calipari.
Okay, you mean from like 6-7 hours ago.
Well, but listen, people may just be waking up in a stupor in Vegas.
Just because you wake up sometimes at 2:30, Jonas.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, AM or PM.
All right, I got to be honest with you, and we like to do it. We like to disagree if it's legitimate. Embrace a debate, but be genuine. Cold cash over hot takes. I'm a big... When it comes to college sports, especially in the SEC, in that area, Clay Travis knows his stuff. Morning host here, FSR. I would say I agree with Clay, you know, probably as much as the average host. But boy, did I disagree with him today. This was all big, like, let's be a little nice, and now I'm going to crush him. He was ranting and raving. He had out his abacus. You know, we could have lent him our adding machine if he wanted. And he was saying, well, Kentucky, you know, and again, my buddy Bob Stoops there, or Mark Stoops there as football head coach. If you look at the amount of money the Kentucky program generates in football and compare it to basketball, it's more in football. So how can so-and-so or how can Calipari get this much money? And then it's like $9.1 million versus Coach K. And then you divide the number of titles. There were all these like crazy calculations about how Calipari is overpaid. Now, first off, we can debate any coach making millions of dollars, but we're saying relative to today's market. And to me, the mistake Clay's making is the mistake most people make when they mess up or they make the wrong move in a game. They don't know the rules. They don't know what is really being discussed. And in my opinion, and this is an opinion, Clay can disagree gladly, hopefully with the same amount of respect, Clay is making it like, well, if we can only sell that luxury box, or if Marlboro, or if, you know, cigarette company XYZ comes in, or internet company XYZ, and they buy the naming rights for our practice facility, all of a sudden now the economics of Calipari's contract makes sense. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about literally is Dillon, Texas. Do you think that the Dillon Panthers were thinking about, oh, when we bring in Voodoo Tatum and if we give his dad a job down there at the car factory with Buddy Garrity, that somehow is that going to be like economically valid?
This is the game that people are going to talk about for years to come.
No, it's literally the reason to live, the number one reason to live for people in Dillon, Texas, the fictitious school. By the way, Peter Berg was on the Fox set, and I got a chance to shake his hand down at the Super Bowl and thank him. I didn't want to bother him. I said, thank you for Friday Night Lights. And the reality is, not everybody in Kentucky, but the Kentucky fans, every year they feel like they have a chance to win the
Absolutely.
Title. They win one title out of 10 or whatever. Hey, maybe they should have won two. Maybe they should have won three. But I got to be honest, it wasn't that long ago. Kentucky wasn't in the conversation. What was that A&M coach they got?
Billy Gillespie.
Yeah, who I liked him when he was at A&M.
Yep.
Bring him in. No, they don't have to have. There's no Billy Gillespies around. And that last $2 or $3 million, I don't know how it looks on the spreadsheet with all the calculations, but literally for the worldview, the self-image of the state, they now feel like for the next 10 years, they are going to be Kentucky basketball competitive for a national title. And to me, it might sound funny to say a couple million here, a couple million there shouldn't matter. But let's be candid. As long as they're breaking even, if the choice is break even and be happy or make some money and be and have your self-image crushed in the ground, I say break even as a businessman. So I think Clay's probably right. Mathematically, economically, it doesn't make sense. But that isn't the question. The question is, what is being bought by Kentucky? And it's a contented life for the Kentucky fans. And a couple extra million for Calipari probably doesn't mean a lot, in my opinion.
Straight out of Vegas!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.